free to come up and ask us any questions that you might have. Really lucky to have David here presenting today. David's been a long-time user of Google Apps for Education in East Lothian and is going to talk to us about the opportunities and challenges about technologies for local authorities. So.
Thank you. Well, first of all, thanks to everyone for coming along. What I would like to do today is just give you an opportunity to see what's involved in using this, and to talk a bit about how on earth we got into the situation of using it in the first place. To do that, I'd just like to take you back to about 2005 in East Lothian and tell you about a development that was going on there. Many of you know Don Leddingham, who is now our Director of People and Midlothian's Director of Education as well. But Don at that time was a head teacher, and he had signed himself up for a master's and had to do a research inquiry. And as part of that, he had to formulate a research question. His question at the time was, how do we improve teaching and learning around East Lothian without spending any real money? And as a result of that, he interviewed teachers and head teachers all around the county. And out of that got a couple of guiding principles which have informed what we're doing here. One was, the one thing you don't do is launch another big initiative, because thank you very much, we have had it up to here with initiatives. We're fed up with people turning up at the school gate, the wheelbarrow, and tipping stuff out and then telling us we've got to get on with it. The other thing they said was that they saw an opportunity to improve what they were doing if only we could stop reinventing the wheel and see what was going on in the other schools. And as a result of that, right about 2005, we created what's now this EduBuzz learning network. And essentially all it is a whole pile of weblogs. But it chunters away all the time. You can see that one, Wallyford Primary, just 19 minutes ago. It's going all the time. It's a really interesting window into what's going on in the schools. So you see that latest one, Wallyford Primary. Looks like we've got some P6s and 7s away at camp. But you see, this has got, if you saw it there, there's over 3,000 staff and pupils and parents and partners and whatnot involved in that system. And that has been going really well. But it was into that environment that Glow arrived. And that sort of raised questions, well, why would we be doing two things? You know, this is starting to look a bit complicated here. We've got this very public site out there, not hidden at all, not private at all, kind of the opposite of Glow. And we thought, well, that's fine. What we will do is the same as we did with EduBuzz. And what we did with EduBuzz, I should say, is that we didn't do any marketing at all. All we did was we showed a few people how to use WordPress to put a blog up for the school or their class. We made a point of not going in for, you know, the mugs, the mouse mats, the adverts. No compulsion at all. And we relied on the fact that if this was any good, then it would spread. And it took off like wildfire. We thought, well, we'll do the same with Glow. It's a different product. It's offering a range of different services. And what we will do is, if we show it to staff initially to introduce it, if there are opportunities here that they see to use this to improve learning in their school, then we'll support them as much as we can to do that. And partly this is driven by resource constraints as well. And that's the way that it went on. We took the same approach with Glow. But by the time Glow had come along, we had had a bit of a problem in that we had ceased our email contract that we had. We had a commercial contract for email with a company, and it was used mainly for the children in secondary who needed an email system to use as part of their learning. And we kind of got ourselves into trouble because we'd cut that contract in the expectation that we would have Glow up and working by the time we needed a new one. And because there was a lot of faffing around involved, not to do with Glow, but more to do with the arrangements for connecting between East Lothian and what was Phoenix, the system that we used, we basically left ourselves high and dry with no email system. And it was at that point that we started looking around for a contingency plan, some kind of email system. And it was at that point that we set up the first Google Apps system. And we were thinking in terms of just using it for the email. But it was once we created the thing and set it up, and it did the job ideally, but it was then that we started to notice that what was in there was incredibly well matched to the sort of learning activities that were emerging under Curriculum for Excellence. You know, we started to notice things like documents that could be worked on collaboratively, presentations that could be worked on collaboratively, things that could be, with a flick of a switch, showcased to the world. I don't know if it was apparent earlier, but if you're writing a document in Google Apps and you're proud of it, flick the switch, make it public, and you can link to it from the website, and it's just another web page. And that made us start thinking, you know, we've already offered two services, one essentially public, one essentially private. This actually looks like it might be useful to some staff as well. And we started to see problems cropping up that it solved. One was with, it was one of the photos Ollie showed of a wee trial we did where we put out tiny EPC netbooks across a P5 cohort in a primary. That was because we wanted to know if this small form factor would work. We were also curious to know about the opportunities presented by allowing something to go back home with the children. We were told by IT, that'll be fine, you can use these, we'll let you put them on the network, but what we'll not do is let you attach them to our servers. We will not let you, we will not back them up for you, we will not support them. So these things went out, and we thought, right, we don't want the children storing stuff on these netbooks. So we need somewhere to store things. And we rapidly found that Glow, which was kind of the obvious first choice at the time, wasn't going to cut it, because each pupil at that time would have had to put their artifacts they created into their MyGlow. And at the time, that was only a 10 megabyte space. So it just wasn't an option at all. So it was into that we realised that Google Apps was also potentially really useful. So that's kind of the background to it. Where I think this matters now is that I know within East Lothian and in many other local authorities, we're starting to think about ways of enabling learners to bring their own devices in, because we know we need more kit in the secondaries, we need more access, we know we can't afford to do it ourselves. But unless we've got some common platform that allows us to use any bit of kit, we're going to struggle. And Google Apps is a really good fit for that, because it kind of disconnects the applications that I use from the device. I don't need to have Word or Keynote or any commercial thing. As long as I've got a browser, I can get onto the thing. So that's kind of the historical bit of it. The next thing I thought would be worth talking about is what's involved in actually setting this up. Because you notice that I went from saying we'd set it up initially just for a few people who needed email, a relatively small set. And it's now deployed across the whole local authority with over 10,000 logins going on. A really nice feature about it is that you can let it grow organically as and when you need it to grow. It doesn't have in it, I'll show you sort of behind the scenes of the control panel for it, but if, as a classroom teacher, you're interested in using Google Apps with your class or in your department or in your school, then you're free to set it up. And there's no reason why within an authority you might not have a number of different installations. There's nothing that says East Lothian's got one installation, therefore it can't have another one. It so happens that with EduBuzz, we were deliberately trying to erode the barriers between the schools. So for us, it was attractive to set it up as one big domain. But you could have one just for your local authority if you want. So, if you're interested in setting up, what's actually involved? You might well think that putting this in place is something that's hugely technical, and the good news is that it's not at all. You basically just need to arm yourself with a domain name. We chose to use edubuzz.org because we'd already settled on that as one which was not tied to any individual school. But if you've got a domain name for your school, then you could use that. If you don't have a domain name, the setup process will talk you through and it'll offer to get one for you. There's a cost there, which is minimal. It's about £10 a year or something to get a domain name. I think the most important thing with domain names is not what they cost, but keeping careful note of the expiry date. That's something that you could easily get caught out with. It's really important that having set up a system using a particular domain name, that you don't end up with it falling into the hands of some Russian cyber squatter who then starts pointing it to something undesirable. So, to go slightly into the geekery a little bit, when you go to set it up, you buy your domain name and you tell the Google App system that's where it's based. So in our case, it's edubuzz.org. And from then on, that's the domain that gets used throughout. All the email addresses end in @edubuzz.org. You can slot in other ones as well. We've got a couple of schools doing that because they want to run their own identity. But that's the bones of it. There's a slight fiddling around required where you go into the control panel for the domain and you say, in our case, we wanted to make sure that if somebody went to docs.edubuzz.org, that would take us to the document interface. I'll go in now as using the admin account. A very long password is not a requirement of Google Apps. This is learned behaviour on my part from children who can spot and read shorter passwords if they see you logging in. But one's got caught out that way. I hope I get it right. My cat followed them. So that's just kind of a nice to have. You set up a wee record that says if somebody comes looking for docs.edubuzz.org, then they go straight into the documents part of it.
But would they just access their documents and not the global documents?
Exactly, yes. It's what we see here by default, I think, is the things that we've been working with recently. But remember what Ross said earlier on about this grand mission to organise the world's information. When I open this up, I'm seeing the things that I've been working with. I can change the sort order if I want. But one of the nicest features is there's a search box up here. It's not showing up very well. But if I do that, it's just a standard Google search. And that will search not only the things I've created, but also the things that have been shared with me. So you can see here's one. I don't tend to use this admin account for much, but this is Snow Depth and East Lothian has been shared with Lynn. So it's not something I actually own, but that's equivalent to doing a search and trying to find something which might be on my laptop, it might be on my file share, it might be in a shared area that I've got access to. And those of you who've tried to find resources in a school will appreciate that can be quite tricky to track things down. Yeah, I didn't want to spend much time on the interface here, but happy to take any sort of questions on that as well. I remember I said, going back to the children with the netbooks, that this was a place where we can create documents. We can also upload stuff into here. So you'll see this message is appearing that it's now going to Google Drive. It started out as purely documents. And if we wanted to, we could upload a Word document and choose whether we kept it in Word format or whether we converted it into a Google document. What we've now got here, though, is for each individual account is 5 gigabytes of space into which people can put anything. And straight away it solved one of our big problems, which was we were starting to get people saying, I want to be able to capture bits of video on a flip camera, and I want to be able to share that video with specific individuals, but I don't want it on the public web. And this was a solution to that. I don't know if we've got a video there, but that works very well.
You
can search by different types of files in here as well. And those of you who have maybe looked at the other sessions and have seen this side of it, the unknown, I thought, might be, what does it actually look like under the bonnet? You know, so I thought it might be good to have a wee look at the admin interface and let you see how easy to use that is.
How does your network cope with potentially 10,000 logins happening at one time? In terms of getting to Google?
The actual usage of any of these online systems is not in line with the total numbers of accounts. It's been the same with Edubuzz, the same with Glow as well. With this one, we're probably seeing about 1,000 logins a week, typically. One of the statistics that you can see on here is the, 7-day active accounts. And that kind of varies with up to about 1,000. You can create accounts. We found it with Glow and other things. You can put them out to schools. Some schools will seize them and say, we can use that. We'll do things with it. Others will parcel it up, send it to the computing department and say, it's to do with IT, it's for you. You know, so that it doesn't...
Are you not using this as a standard storage for every people he's loading then?
We still have... They still have their network logins and they still have the shares on the servers. Yeah.
Whatever suits them.
Exactly. Yeah. Let's have a wee look at the behind the scenes and see what's involved in doing that. Access to it, firstly, can be from your own account. So there's none of this idea of a separate admin account that we've seen with Glow. I'm on the mail system just now. I'm going to click on the settings. Oh, wait a minute, I need to get on the mail. Get into the mail part of it. I think this is because it has its roots in a mail system, as a mail system. there's a secret door that takes us through into the management side of it. But it's just from, it can be from any account. I think it's deliberately made slightly hidden in case I walk away from my computer and one of the helpful children gets their hands on it. I click on the settings cog in Mail, and because this account has admin rights and you manage this domain, menu appears in here. So this is the what they call the dashboard. So this is kind of the starting point to drive it. So if I come in here, and the most common reason any teacher would ever go into an online system would be because somebody's forgotten their password. So we'll work on the assumption that Ollie has forgotten his password. He's got an account in here. You can either, if you know the username, you can put it in. I'm going to do last name Bray because there can't be many of them around. So there's Ollie Bray. I'll need to disable this one now that he's leaving East Lothian. I haven't done that, but click on the user's name. Up comes the screen here. I'm impressed he's got a strong strength rating on his password. But we can just go in here, and if I want to change his password, then I can do that here. You know, so those of you who have been into some other systems will see that it's this is within the sort of skill level that teachers look at and they say, yeah, I can do that. And one of the nice features of it is that I can delegate out the ability to change passwords. So if I decide that I trust Ollie, which is maybe pushing it a bit, but if I decide that he should have password changing rights, I just click on this roles and privileges thing. At the moment he's got super admin anyway, but you can do this, select a role. So for any teacher, I could go down here and I could say, I'll give you help desk admin. And if you've got help desk admin, then you can change passwords. Potentially, I would see no reason why you couldn't use pupils in that role, particularly in the upper secondaries. We've seen on EduBuzz pupils getting very involved in kind of almost taking control of the running of systems and helping out staff, and there would be no reason why you couldn't do that. You'll see on the left-hand side here that we've got the different schools around East Lothian are in here. This is in the category of nice to have. There's absolutely no reason that you need to have these. When we first set it up, you set up all your users as individuals, and each person is identical. They have the same rights and privileges. The reason this came in was to allow people to adjust the features that are available. So if you decide, for example, you're going to set it up for your school, and you're going to offer maybe the chat service to some years but not others, then you can do it this way by adjusting for each user group what service they have access to. So if I Dunbar Grammar here, look at the services. This is a thing, so I'm now in Dunbar Grammar and we're getting a view of the various services that are available. And it couldn't really be easier. So I think they decided that they didn't want the Google Talk running. But that's the way it's done. So very simple switches. This also gives you an idea of quite how much there is in here. most of what we've heard today has been about the use of these online tools to support the learning process. But I think there's a really big opportunity here to allow learners in schools, almost as a side effect of the exam learning, to gain experience of using tools which would be useful to them if they were, as many will do, end up setting up their own business. There's no reason here why you might not want to. You could set up a site as a mock business site, and you could switch on some of the features here for a particular group to allow them to explore some of these things. And you'll see that there is no shortage of services in here that we can switch on if we want.
So David, where are the groups in that? You can see the facilities.
Yeah, we've got groups in this system are essentially like distribution lists. So we can make a group that consists of teachers who are working on a particular project or a class. You see some of the ones that have been created here. And they have access to, if they want, the discussion forum. This is identical to the public Google group service. One of their most useful features for staff is that, do you remember when we were in the main hall and Ollie had a document up and he clicked to create, to share it, and he shared it with Pam? If at that point he typed in a distribution list name, so if he put in there, 2.9 group at edubuzz.org, then he would have shared it straight away with all the members of that group. So that's a really common thing for teachers to use when they're sharing documents with a group of learners.
Have you developed any tools for automated group creation?
We haven't. We've done everything on this has been done manually, and partly it's just because of resources. In East Lothian, there's only two of us, there's myself and Shirley. Shirley is half-time on the assistive technology stuff. We run Glow and the Edubuzz WordPress system and this as well. So, in a way, I think one of the surprising things, really, is that we've been able to do that alongside everything else. And although this is manual, it's certainly the case that the amount of time and effort that has gone into setting up accounts and changing passwords and all these sort of things in this is a fraction of the time that it has taken to do the same tasks within Glow, even though it's automatic. You know, which seems counterintuitive, but it is automatic, but it's complex. And people fall down holes all the time. You know, with this, we've got one admin account with which I can get to anything, work with any user. I don't have this business of having to think, right, well, that's a site that someone's created at that school. I need to get the SCA account for that one to work with it. But it's all very fast, and it's nice.
It's perfect for mobile as well, isn't it? Mobile devices.
Yeah, and this works really well with mobile. That's something Ollie didn't show, but if I go on to documents here. I'm in an admin account just now, so if I quickly create a document. And we'll call this mobile demo. I can't spell when I've got things up on a whiteboard. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to share this document, and I'll share it with David Gilmore. You see it here, what it's doing is it's finding
the accounts that match within the domain. So I'll share that with me. Sometimes if I'm doing this with groups of teachers, we're too short of time to do it just now, but making a document completely public and giving them a link to it and having a whole host of people working on the same document at the same time is quite effective in getting the point across. Right, so I think I've added him in as well. Did I not do that? Yeah, him. He can edit as well, share and see. Right. Yeah, so that's now shared with me. This is dicing with death here because I'm using the phone to make my wireless hotspot as well, but hopefully on the mobile there's a rather nice app for Android, but works the same with browsers as well. If I get Drive, I'm just going to open up my Drive here. What I should see, with any luck, is this document coming up. It's having a little thing in the Drive.
That's an important factor when you're looking at Glow for the next 15 months with Microsoft 365 compared to that. You're going to get full mobile functionality with that, which you won't with Glow.
Yeah, exactly.
And so you bring your own device policy. It's kind of really very...
Well, that's where we find with the netbooks that we're finding it really useful with them.
It's important for any local authority thinking about the future in terms of bringing your own device and what you're doing there and what perhaps Glow won't be able to offer for the 15-month extension.
David, can I just... I know you're busy with that.
No, fair enough.
One of the problems... How onerous is it for you to support all this? Because, I mean, I know you're covering it really for the whole authority. One of the things that we struggle with in my own authority, we're very heavily in Microsoft's pocket, but getting support for things can be horrendous. It can take days, which, you know, something which would be relatively simple to do.
Well, I think the really striking thing about this, the main part of the support for any system in use in schools is helping teachers to get started with it. What's really striking with this is that you do not get those kind of questions. What usually happens is you do a quick demonstration. I saw Fergal was doing it earlier with talking about the use of Chromebooks with his class, that he was showing the children documents, saying, here's how you share it, and they just go in and they just use it. Because the usability is kind of on a par with the things that people are used to using all the time anyway. It kind of matches expectations. It's like Facebook and all these other things. It works in the way that you expect. And that's not accidental. I know that if you're inside Google and you launch a new bit of software, you get people put in front of it who get wired up with these eyeball tracking devices to watch and see whether they look where you're expecting them to look and whether they do get confused over it. And I think that attention to usability pays back hugely for us, because we simply, with Glow around East Lothian, I can pretty much tell you who's using it, what they're using it for, and that's because they constantly come back. One of the people who's demonstrating today, Julian at Dunbar, has got huge development going on in Dunbar Grammar, and I've never even seen it, because it just happens. And the same is true with the admin side of it. The bottom line is, I only raised my first support call about a month ago with Google on this, so it's been running for years, and the only reason I needed to raise a support call was because we had accidentally deleted somebody's account and we needed it brought back. So it was our fault. But there has been no
technical issues at all. Let's see if I can make my phone talk to
us. Can I ask a question while you're doing that? Are Google committed to continuing with this for a while yet?
It's absolutely.
Do you have an offer of supporting an authority to get it started?
So there's two different things here. So there's Google Apps for Education, which we're 100% committed to supporting. So all of our core services, the mail, calendar, documents, sites, groups, we're committed to offering those for free to schools and universities. We've got 16 million active users around the world. So this isn't something that we're trying out. This is something that's been used for years and years, and it's something that Google are very much behind. And in terms of that, you've got 24/7 support. You've got online resources specifically for teachers, for students that they can go on and use. So we've developed a lot of things that way. For Scotland in particular, though, we've created this Scottish Fast Track Programme, which isn't worldwide. This is just something for Scotland, specific to the needs that have come up right now in Scotland. And that's why we're doing these type of roadshows, which aren't done in very many places. And we've also pulled in a lot of partner help, like Moodle, who are offering additional services for free, but above and beyond what they would normally, and CloudReach, who are a deployment and migration planner, who are offering, I think, 2 days of free deployment planning. So that's something that's specifically for Scotland, above and beyond what would normally happen, and that package is available now for local authorities to take advantage of. But the wider apps for education, that's something we're very much behind. It's not something we have a timeline on, but we're only going to offer it free for 6 months. So this is a much, much broader place.
David, can I ask you?
Yes,
I've used this in my school for a while as well. I think it's fabulous. What freedom do we want to choose to take our young people, either as a class or as a school, and our authority is saying, look, you know, the national government plan is this, what kind of risk are we putting ourselves into? Somebody high up saying, no, you have to stop doing that.
I think the key, in a
policy way in terms of people's safety and things like this.
I think it goes back to the fundamental principle behind GLO and when it first came about. Because GLO was thought up by people who realised the network was getting more important than the computer. And the big concern at the time was to make sure that we didn't get pockets of unequal provision, that every school had a baseline level of service that would enable schools to exploit these new technologies in learning. There was no any intent at that point that it would be all things to all people. It was intended as a baseline, and it had to be a bit conservative because it had to be accepted by 32 different local authorities, and whoever managed to get 32 authorities to agree on anything deserves a medal. You know, that must have been an incredibly difficult process, but inevitably it meant that things were not included that some might have preferred. One example I had with one authority had a service which was paid for, which allowed creation of websites, and I thought it was really disappointing to hear stories like folks saying, well, now that we've got GLO, we'll just cease that and save ourselves some money. That was never the intention of GLO. And I think looking to the future, to me it seems, on the basis of what we heard last week, the direction that we're seeing emerge looks like it's not going to fit very well with the kind of bring-your-own-device policies that are bubbling up everywhere. But it might be fine for the more corporate management usage within schools, and maybe that's the way it will evolve. You know, I think the key strength of the current GLO system has been that national point of view and the support for what teachers want to do in accessing national groups and linking up with other teachers. It's never been a jotter. And I think this is very much an electronic version of a jotter. You know, as Ollie was showing, you can use this to do peer feedback. I'm sorry, if I could get the mobile to be on this while it's being a hotspot. I would have done better, but I haven't managed to do that.
Do you think that this is very much a bottom-up thing, whereas Glow is very much top-down in terms of the way it's...
Oh, you're putting words in my mouth here.
I'm interested in
well, that was... I think that... I would say that it has emerged that way. We tried in East Lothian, having established this principle that we were going to try not to dump things on people and tell them it was good for them. You know, we treated the WordPress blogs, Glow and Google Apps all in exactly the same way. We've offered them, we've shown people what they can do, and we've said, if you're interested, we'll help you take it further. And this has gone off like crazy. There's over 10,000 shared documents in this. The usage is very high compared to what we saw with Glow. Because Glow tended to peak after Christmas and New Year. You know, that's a New Year resolution, I'm going to go in there. It was mainly staff. It's mainly staff accessing national groups. And often it would be people coming and saying, I need to get in because I've been to this course and somebody's taken the output and they've locked it away inside Glow. Then I need to go in and get it. So there were sort of counterproductive things like that going on. But just as a day-to-day tool for making learning fun within the school, this has been really successful. And it's you can't take it for granted when you're using it, but every time you go in, it's different. Now, that might spook some people, but what it means is it's constantly updating. Wee things appear. There's emails come out just telling you about new features. You know, and initially it was wee things like, we now support comments within the cells of a spreadsheet, which was quite a useful thing in its day. But now you're starting to see some incredibly useful things that... One thing I'd love to show you, because one of the criticisms that you sometimes get, you'll get people saying, but it's not as good as a full-blown desktop application. You know, because when you look in the word processor, it kind of looks a bit naughty. It's not got so many bells and whistles and drop-downs that you might be used to seeing. But what I found is incredible amounts of that is to do with printing. And with this, printing is taking a bit of a back seat. This is something which I find is a useful demonstration of how once you get away from the idea that a spreadsheet is something you work on and then print, this is an example of the sort of thing that you can do with them. This is some data which was kind of annoying me. It's a spreadsheet of the pupils on the school roll in all our primaries. In all our schools, in fact. Here's the 96 data. We're seeing the pupils on the roll, the number of pupils entitled to free school meals, and what that is a percentage of the roll. There's the 96 data. And down a bit, there's 97 data. 98, and so on. Now imagine if we're doing a sort of number handling thing and we're trying to spot what are the patterns in this. In a normal spreadsheet, you would maybe make a chart and look at that chart. But when your spreadsheet is powered by this service, all sorts of exciting things become possible. This is an example of that. It's a thing called a motion chart. It's what I've got here is I take my spreadsheet data and I've made a graph. Now here's number of pupils entitled to the free school meals. Here's pupils on the roll of the school. So we can see over on the right-hand side, here's Musselburgh Grammar, which is our biggest school. Down the bottom end here, we've got some of our tiny rural primaries. But you notice that the data we're seeing is just for 1996, and we've got a play button down here. I can click play, and we can watch that play through time. Look like there was a... Here's a point going up to
a peak. Which one was that? That was Preston Vance Primary. Why was that? What was going on? We can look at the data. Maybe this isn't showing me it in the way that I want. Maybe I'd rather see not the number of pupils entitled to free school meals, but maybe what that is as a percentage. That's giving me a different view of it. Yeah, I don't want to label the point, but I just want to get across the fact this is different. You know, there's new possibilities here. So the I've managed to lose my... Yeah, we're over time. So we finish up at that. If anyone is sort of want to continue the conversation, please get in touch. I'm dgilmore@eastlothian.gov.uk. dgilmore on Twitter if you're into those sort of time-wasting technologies. I would encourage you, though, to, as David was saying earlier, you know, explore the possibilities, give it a try. The great thing is there isn't a big overhead involved here. This is not something that you need a computing science degree to do, because it's been built for the man in the street. And that's the core of the product set, I think, that makes the difference. It's been built for the man in the street, and what you've got around about it here are just a set of tools that make it easy to use it in a classroom situation. So when I go to share something, it knows who the people are in that school and so on. But thanks for coming along. I hope you found it useful just to get some idea of what's involved. But please just keep in touch if you want to. Are there any final questions before we finish up? No? Thank you very much.
We've got three lunch sessions outside, so